Hi, this is David Arkenstone.
This is Annie Lennox of Eurythmics.
Hi, I'm Bart from The Simpsons on Fox. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Hey, we're the Dolly Rods.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Lewis.
This is Bruce Springsteen and E Street Band.
Yeah! You're listening to The Sounds of Christmas podcast.
Welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. I'm Ken Kessler. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Singer-songwriter Tommy Byrne is with us today. Hi, Tommy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ken.
Is singer-songwriter, is that the best way to introduce you, or do you prefer something else?
No, that's fine. I mean, these days I'm more a part-timer singer-songwriter, but singer-songwriter is perfect.
You have a new Christmas single out, which is how you got on my radar, but I went to your YouTube channel, and as I'm looking back, saw early covers of Springsteen, some dedicated to Clarence Clemons, lots of concert performances with Onto Something. Is that an old band, or is that what you're part of now?
That was my first band. Actually, the first ever band I had was Tommy Byrne and the Jersey Sound. Now, before we made our debut on the Jersey Shore here, I got contacted by a lawyer for a cover band called the Jersey Sound and said, "Sorry, kid. We love you, but this is our band name. You can't use it." So everybody was calling because our debut, we headlined the Stone Pony Showcase. And I was promoting a big time promoting and nonstop. You know, it was our first big show, actually our first ever show as an original band, all the songs that I wrote. And I was making flyers and doing posts. And back then, you know, you're talking 2011, social media was a little different then. So it was a little easier to really just go crazy. Now you get Facebook restricted in 2 seconds for something that I pulled back then. So somebody got word of it, and they were getting calls at the Stone Pony is the Jersey Sound, which is like a, you know, Frankie Valli and like doo-wop kind of cover band. Are they going to be at the Pony? And they were like, "No, well, we're seeing the Jersey Sound is going to be at the Stone Pony on, you know, X date." And I got a phone call from their lawyer and they said, "Sorry, you have to change your last part of your band name." So I said, "Well, guys, we got to change our name because the Pony was putting Tommy Byrne in the Jersey Sound." And I said, "Well, maybe one day we'll be onto something with one of these songs." So they said, "You know, that sounds like a good band name." So Tommy Byrne and Onto Something was the band. So that you are right. Those were our first ever kind of performances there.
And you can catch all those on Tommy's YouTube channel. I'll put a link to that down in the show notes. But as I was looking at that, fast forward 5 or 6 years, and your engagement proposal is on there, and you had some help from Bret Michaels. How did that happen?
Well, getting started, you know, when you pick up a guitar, you obviously have influences. Everyone thinks mine is Bruce Springsteen, which it is. You know, Bruce is a huge part of my songwriting style. And basically, if you live on the Jersey Shore, you know, at one point, you're going to meet Bruce Springsteen, you're going to hear his music somewhere at a bar. And that just kind of happens, whether you want it to or not. It's there. You can't avoid it here in New Jersey. Also, same thing with Bon Jovi and Southside Johnny, those types of guys. So everyone thinks it's Bruce, but my first ever kind of cover that I did when I just picked up a guitar and I started practicing and just, I was a cover musician, obviously, first before I started writing songs. And everyone said, "Tom, you got to do Every Rose Has Its Thorn." And I was like, you know, my friends and I, who I wrote Cole for Christmas, it was inspired by basically my best friends out on Christmas Eve partying, you know, when we were single, we always went to Poison concerts. So Bret Michaels was like a huge part of our life and my childhood. I mean, early I guess childhood. You're still a child at 19, 18. But Brett was like a huge thing. And we all partied. And we, you know, at all the parties, you know, that we had outside of college and in college, we always had Poison on. And we went to all the concerts every time they were here at PNC. And it happened to be Memorial Day weekend. I knew I was going to propose to my wife. And I said, I got to have Brett Michaels help me out here in some fashion. And he happened to be performing at the Headliner here in New Jersey with Boomer and Carton at the time on WFAN radio. And my other friend, Bob Holding, was the backing band. And they had Brett Michaels come up and perform Every Rose Has Its Thorn. So after he was done, I went around the back and I told his one of his entourage what was going on. And I said, look, he signed my first ever guitar that I learned how to play on. He's been a part of my life, and I want him to kind of set the table here for me. So Brett got a good laugh out of it. And he said, what do you need me to say? I said, just be Brett Michaels and do what you do. And he did it really fast for us. And I was so appreciative for him. You know, we still listen to Poison to this day. My wife, we go to the concerts when they're around. So Poison actually is one of my favorite bands. I know, you know, it's not everybody's favorite, but they had a lot of good hits in the 80s, obviously, and they had a nice string of, you know, Every Rose Has Its Thorn, Talk Dirty to Me, Something to Believe In, you know, all those big songs when, you know, Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue obviously were dominating the airwaves, but Poison was right there. And, you know, Brett is still out there doing it and he sounds great. So yeah, Brett Michaels, that's kind of how it came about there, Ken. And, I got a good kick out of it because my wife had no clue what was going on. And I had to send her the actual video that you see there on the video to her phone first. So it took a minute for her to open it up. And then all of a sudden, you know, that's kind of how it played out there. So that's, my Brett Michaels story there.
That's a great story. Shortly after that, Unstoppable, A Song for Autism. Was that your first release?
Yeah. So basically what I did in 2014, I went to Chase the Stars. I had the band. We had a good stretch, about 3 years on the Jersey Shore. And my band was a little bit older. You know, they were in their 40s and 50s, some guys in their early 60s. And they said, look, you're still young enough. You got to go chase it now. Don't worry about us. Go and do what you can. So during that period from 2014 to about 2017, right before I got married, I chased it very hard. I wound up recording a string of demos that we never released. Unfortunately, I had a tough time with the producer that I worked with. He had all these people that he said he worked with previously, and he did. His credits were definitely true. And I had a lot of guys who even sang on the Call for Christmas come out to the studio and help me. We had about five songs in the studio, and they unfortunately never got released because just the industry, as you get higher, I've learned it gets slimier and slimier, unfortunately. And that is one encounter I like to forget. But so I did have a nice solo EP there with just Tommy Byrne outside of Onto Something. I had a lot of studio musicians come in and play on those records, but we just never got access to them. They kind of got shelved in a way. And then after that, I also chased it again with another type of person, and also the same problem happened. They were kind of leading me on through the whole time, saying that, you know, they worked with Darius Rucker and Nashville and all these kinds of people. And I changed my sound. I went kind of mainstream for that pop sound that was being big at the time. And nothing happened. I wrote a song. I forget what it was originally titled, but it was very poppy and it wasn't really my style. Obviously, my influence was rock and roll and, you know, 50s rock and roll and 60s and those kind of Bob Seger and those guys, Jackson Browne. I changed my whole style just to try and chase it. And unfortunately, nothing happened there. So then I basically gave up. I gave up on all my dreams. I was chasing it for as long as I could. And that really, you know, I was hurt by it. And I put the guitar away. I put everything away. And I basically put it down. And then I worked in the media. So that was also another dream of mine. So at the time, I was working for ABC News and Fox News in New York. And that's what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to do both at the same time. I was trying to do both. I wanted to be like Mike Francesa and Mike and the Mad Dog on the radio here. They were my heroes on the radio end. I worked at WFAN and all these kind of places, but you know, I was chasing that. So I went back to chasing that dream and put the guitar away. Then one night I was coming home from the city and a melody came into my head in the vestibule. And I said, you know, I think something's happening here. So Unstoppable came to life that night. And basically the story behind Unstoppable, my cousin Anthony is autistic, my second cousin. His sister, Isabella, is my goddaughter. And I wrote the song that night when I came home. And I said, I think this is good, but let me go over to their house and see what they think about the song. So I played it for them. And Isabella's father said, I think you need to just kind of tweak it a little bit to where how Anthony communicates, even though he can't. He is verbal, but to an extent. Obviously, the autism community, it's a different, you know, different spectrums for everything. There's high functioning, low functioning, and in the middle. Yeah. I'd say at the time, Anthony was probably in the middle where he can communicate, but not all the time. So he said that's what the chorus has to be. So I tweaked the chorus. 5 minutes later, Bella said, can I help out? And I said, sure. You know, this is your brother. And at the time, she was seven, and she wanted to kind of come into this world of writing and performing and stuff. And she was dancing in school and already a performer there, but she wanted to try music. And I said, okay, Bella, come sit at the table. We'll finish the song together. So the first half of the song were all her lyrics. You know, we kind of helped her a little bit, but for the majority, they all were her lyrics. So we put them together. And another 5 minutes later, I put my flip phone around and recorded it, just a very rough take of us. And I said, this is too priceless not to share with people, you know, on the spectrum and different foundations and stuff. So what I did, I put it on my Facebook account, and all of a sudden that went viral. I wasn't expecting that at all. A huge page, millions and millions of followers, called The Positive Power of Positivity. They shared the song. So basically, they credited me. They tagged the band page back then and put Unstoppable out with me. So everybody was going to our page. It went viral. I forget how many millions of views it got on their page. And they were like, where can we buy the song? We need to hear this song. I said, look, this is all you guys have right now because I didn't record it. This is it. This is the first kind of take on the actual song. And from there, I said, well, what do we do about this? You know, I kind of stopped the dream and recording and all these kind of things, but people were calling for this song. And I basically reached out to a buddy of mine, Jeff Erdman, whose friend was a Grammy-nominated producer in New York City, Artie Skye. And Artie basically brought us into New York one night. And in between, so that went viral in January. We didn't record it until the beginning of March of that year. So things changed, and Bella was singing the song differently than that first version that everybody loved. And I said, are people going to be not disappointed, but like, hey, where's this version that we first heard? But she sang it beautifully, and she started really singing it like you would sing it. And we went into the studio, she sang her part, and Artie said, hey, you're going to have to change the way you're singing it now. She's the star. So I was kind of background to Isabella the whole time. She's the star. She even joked with me this past weekend. We were at my cousin's wedding, and she was there. She's now 13. And she said, hey, too tall. They all call me, I'm 6'7". They all call me too tall, all the little cousins. Just so you know, I gave you your first taste of fame, too tall. That's what she said to me at 13. I said, yeah, you're probably right. So now this is why Too Tall has to get back in the game and write some more songs, you know? So yeah, we basically released the song. We recorded it. Artie played all the instrumentals outside of just me on the guitar and Bella singing. And I did some harmonies and things like that you hear. But we put it out there. Then that went viral. So we went viral twice within 3 months of each other. Wow. And I got a phone call. My friend Stephanie was on an interview in New York City. And it was for this company that does like different promotional events and things like that. And they were doing this big play, or not play, but production on Broadway. And it was for autism awareness. And she said, "You got to hear my friend's song. They just released it. It's viral." And the guy who put the show together calls me within the next 2 days. And at first I thought it was like a prank, you know, my friends are pranking me or something. And he goes, "No, we want you to play the song on Broadway." So I go and I, you know, like, you know, this is all my dream coming true for a great cause. You know, we raised awareness for a lot of different foundations around the country. Unfortunately, we didn't really raise as much as we had hoped. Because everybody just wanted the video and shared the video. We gave them the song there. And that's kind of, it's a weird game. You know, sometimes you almost have to put the video out, but you want them to also donate and download the song at the same time. But, you know, so we didn't raise too much what we expect, even though we went viral and millions of views, but we still kind of gave exposure to these great foundations. There was a foundation in California called Surfers Healing, which did Anthony, whenever they're around New Jersey, when he was younger, the surfers would take all the kids on the spectrum out into the water. And, you know, it's kind of healing, you know, a way of therapy. So we gave, you know, great exposure for them with this whole project, and the Autism Society of America, and, you know, a lot of different autism foundations. Autism Speaks is obviously the big one everyone knows. But, you know, a lot of people shared it. And then the following year, before we go, I'm on Broadway and I'm looking at the lights and everything. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. Here we are at the Gershwin Theater where Wicked is. And they have a Broadway backing band. I worked in the city, so it was easier for me. So one day after work, I met the Broadway musicians who played the song. I rehearsed with them. And then after that, you know, I was like, oh my God, you know, they had strings on it and all these kind of, it was like amazing just to hear it twice, you know, as you rehearse, because, you know, in Broadway, it's like boom, 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 in and out, you know, like there's all these different people going on. And I sing it and I was like, I hope that sounded good. You know, hey, I'm just a musician from New Jersey that likes Bruce Springsteen. I'm not a Broadway singer, you know? So they loved it. And we wound up doing it that night. They also had an autistic choir sing with me and Bella and Artie, who played the guitar on it. And there we were on Broadway, and it was a great night. And they do it, I think, every year. I forget who the host was, but he was the dad, the voice of in Moana. He played the dad. He was the host, and he came up to me. He goes, "I love your song." That's who he was, like the host of the night. So I'm like, all my dreams that I ever, you know, wanted. We were played on Sirius XM, on the kids radio station, iHeartRadio, all over the place. And I was doing radio interviews in United Kingdom and Pittsburgh and all these different places around the country. So every April, obviously, April's Autism Awareness Month, it comes around again. My phone starts lighting up again and everybody's watching Unstoppable on Facebook or finding it on YouTube. But I think up to date on organically on just our video alone has about 250,000 views, which is just remarkable when you think about, you know, what was going on our page. And then, you know, every now and then, like a viral site will say, "Hey, could we use Unstoppable and put it on our page?" So I was like, sure, you know, anything to kind of get the message out again. Eventually, before the pandemic happened, we had all gathered together. We were going to re-release Unstoppable, but like an adult version, kind of, you know, Bella kind of passing the torch. And I had a lot of the Jersey singers here that were going to get involved, almost like a We Are the World type song for autism, which I still eventually would like to revisit. But right now, it's just not in the cards. So eventually, I'm sure we'll get it done, but kind of make it more a non-kid song where, you know, there are kids on the spectrum, but kids become adults. So make it more of an adult-related song that is more mainstream as opposed to kid-friendly. Eventually, you know, I'll get the mojo going again on that. There are a lot of different projects I have in mind for that, but that's one of the things. So that is Unstoppable, Ken. It was a remarkable thing that happened. Never would have expected it in a million years for that to happen, you know, and it's just kind of crazy. You know, you blink, like I mentioned, she was seven then. Now she's 13. That's how far, you know, how fast life goes. And it's just like remarkable just to look back. You know, she looks back at it and she laughs because she's like, I don't sing like that anymore. I'm an adult, you know, I'm a teenager, you know, but it's just, you know, it was really cool. And there was a dancing group, a dance company in Massachusetts that contacted me during that process. And they did and Bella still dances to this day. And they said, we want to put a dance routine to this song for our autism night as well. So they sent me a video. I think I shared that on the page a long time ago. And they're dancing to our song, you know, in front of people. And I'm like, this is amazing. What's happened here? Then the following year, Sesame Street, which is big on autism awareness, shared the song. And they sent us stuff and stuff for Anthony and things like that. It was just like really, really crazy to see that a year later, still, there was so much love for the song. So they shared it during April, which is obviously Autism Awareness Month. So it got all the way to Sesame Street. You know, I still think that that song, something could happen with it. You know, the world works in crazy ways that maybe that will come back. So it was just really, really cool to this day to think about what happened. You know, it started in a house right there, you know, a couple chords. You know, it's not rocket science what we did, but the lyrics, you know, that's obviously the most powerful thing, the lyrics and the message. If you have that, I think that's always a good equation for a good song. So that's Unstoppable in a nutshell.
It's really amazing how quickly all of this happened when you went almost from one day of hanging up the guitar and this is done to turning around and you're on Broadway performing your song. Wow.
Yeah. It kind of like, and then after that, everyone was like, you sure you don't want to write another song or two? So we did write another song, Bella and I, which is more kind of family and fun and stuff. But, you know, it was so hard because once we did Unstoppable, it was like, how do you top that? You know, there's no way to top that. You know, it's almost like, you know, when Bruce wrote Born to Run or Stairway to Heaven and those kind of songs, like, for me, that was my Born to Run, you know, Unstoppable. Like, how do you top that? How do you ever top that, what we did and the message and the lives we've touched, you know, around here and around the country? I mean, I think we've been streamed in, I don't know, 24 different countries at this point or something that I can keep track of on my little tracker here every now and then. So it's just really remarkable that even to this day, it's still being streamed, you know, the streams come in, you make half a penny or something like that. But it's funny because you see like Great Britain and Ireland and all these different places that are still listening to it. So, you know, it's just really, really cool we did. But I don't know if you can ever top that. I really don't.
So then we get to Christmas music a few years later with Christmas Means More this year. What led you to get back to recording after Unstoppable?
Christmas Means More this year came in September. September of that year in the pandemic, I wrote the song and I had never written a Christmas song. And obviously Christmas is huge and we love Christmas in this family. And my second saxophone player, Gary Tripps, he unfortunately had cancer. And in October of that year, things got worse and I wanted to complete the song. So I went to go see him when the song was completed and the first rough draft of it, and I played it for him. And that was kind of my last gift to him, who gave me so much in my life. You know, like I mentioned earlier, my band was older, you know, in their late 40s, early 50s, early 60s. And they were fantastic musicians. They've been on the block a long time, been through all the wars and the battles, and cover bands and little dive bars and things like that. Gary also had original music back in the day, and he had some really cool songs too. And I said, this has to be for you, Trips. And I just basically loved him so much. He was like the backbone of the band. And it was heartbreaking when he passed for me. You know, it was like really my first life kind of post-grandparents, you know, 2006, I lost both my grandparents. So someone so close to you to lose, especially leading up to the holidays, it was just really tough. And I wanted to complete the song, but it was the pandemic. And we had to basically record remotely. And I had a lot of musicians. So we have a foundation here called Holiday Express in New Jersey. And Holiday Express, they do a lot of things around Christmas time, but all year long. And a lot of the musicians who play in Holiday Express were on the song. So we decided to raise money for Holiday Express with the song. And we got it out really close to the end of the season, just because everybody had to record remotely. I had little Steven from the E Street Band. At the time, he was Darlene Love's musical director. He played guitar on it. And then a couple others that are in, like, Bon Jovi. When Bon Jovi does a benefit and he has like a side band, a lot of those musicians are in it. So they were established, really great players. They've been on the shore circuit for a long time, very established. So it just took a little bit longer than we had expected. Also, we're filming and everybody at the time, you know, is sending phone footage in from their house and things like that to put the video together. So, you know, you had the recording process of recording remotely everything and then going to see people and get stuff, you know, because we wanted saxophone on it and people playing the saxophone and those types of things. So that all had to be sent in and then put together. And we did, I think, a really, really good job for a remotely recorded song. I mean, a lot of people said you wouldn't have even known that this was recorded basically remotely from everybody. I was able to kind of get a video guy that followed me around a couple places. But that was really it. You know, the violin player, Taylor Hope, she's an amazing. She plays with Glenn Burtnick. So if you ever see the Summer of Love tour in that down in Florida, I know they do a lot of different shows. Taylor plays a lot with Glenn Burtnick and those guys. And Taylor was the only person that I went to her house and saw her physically outside of all the musicians. So we got it done in the nick of time. And that's another one, you know, like Christmas means more this year. You know, I think we could put it out again in some fashion and re-release it and re-record it, and it'll sound even better because everybody was remote. You know, it changes when you're not in the studio together recording music and the chemistry and the way the music comes out. So that is how basically Christmas Means More this year came about. I contacted my first church that I belonged to and recorded a lot of stuff you see there. You'll see in the video that, you know, things were taped up. You know, it was very, very, you know, the heart of pandemic, you know, 2020 winter, that's when things shut down again. So, you know, it catches the mood in what was going on in the pandemic. You know, Christmas means more this year. There were a lot of lives lost due to, you know, COVID and stuff like that. People were gathering, you know, let's remember the good times we had, you know, let's light a candle for those that we've lost. That's, you know, that was Gary Tripp's for me. So in the video, you see I'm kneeling down at the pew with the candle there. You know, so all these kind of things, it was about the pandemic, but in my heart, it was for Gary Tripp's, who was my second saxophone player. And that's really Christmas Means More. And the best way I can describe it from 2020 seems like decades ago. So it's just fun to see that. I think that got about 10,000 views when we first put it out. But we released that like, I think, December 19th or something. So the season was really over by then, where we didn't really have that long season push with it. And we did what we could. And the Holiday Express was very grateful for us doing it. We raised a couple bucks for them and I sent it their way. So that was the Holiday Express and Christmas Means More this year. It was a collective effort between us.
And then last year was Always By Your Side, unless I'm missing something in between.
No,
Christmas single, right?
Yeah, Always By Your Side. So another one. Unfortunately, these Christmas songs, Ken, they don't come to me in the summer.
That'd be too easy.
Yeah, you know, Christmas songs are usually recorded in the summer. I was like, yeah, but I guarantee you they were written the year before and they hold off to release them, you know, in the following year in Christmas season. But me, I don't like to operate that way. You know, like I like to operate in the moment, you know, where, hey, I wrote a song. Let's record it. Let's do the best we can with it and put it out there and try and see, you know, if we can touch people's lives, if maybe it sticks, you know, and that's really Always By Your Side. Always By Your Side was really just a solo acoustic song, to be honest. We had a keyboard player, Billy Siegel, who basically put all the other instruments on it with his keyboard there. And again, another one that I wrote and didn't release until like December 15th, you know, or whenever we put it out, I forget. But it really, I tried doing some cool things with it. Two of my favorite Christmas movies, obviously one is It's a Wonderful Life and then A Christmas Carol. I like the Muppets Christmas Carol. That's just me, but I also am, I guess, an older millennial. So the millennials kind of, they hold on the Muppets Christmas Carol. Like the older generations, It's a Wonderful Life is what, I think I saw a meme or something like that. Like the older generations, It's a Wonderful Life is the Muppets Christmas Carol to the millennials. So that's my favorite Christmas Carol, but It's a Wonderful Life, you know, how could you not like that movie? It's an all-time classic. Most people do know, unless you're a little younger, about It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart, I actually worked in the studio where the pool scene was filmed. When the pool opens up, that got converted into a old movie theater, which was abandoned. But it was in Astoria, Queens, at Kaufman Astoria Studios in New York. And that's where the pool scene happened, where Jimmy Stewart and everybody is there and they fall into the pool. So I was there and, you know, I remembered, you know, just being there and feeling those kind of ghosts, I guess you would say, and all that fun stuff they filmed there, being there. So It's a Wonderful Life, huge part of my family. And that's really, you know, I picked up a guitar and I said, I wrote that the start of 2023, and I held on to it for a while, and I didn't go back to it till like the end of November of last year. And it was written really during a hard time in my life, kind of post-pandemic, where, you know, I felt very lonely, even though I wasn't. And I felt very much like Jimmy Stewart, and you know, kind of, is the world against me? What's going on here? You know, and it was a tough time, to be honest. It really was. You know, different things happened in my life. And even though I shouldn't have felt that way, you know, I have a beautiful family and kids. But for whatever reason, I was battling some demons, and thank God I pulled myself out of it. But, you know, that's really, I picked up the guitar and I wrote a song like, hey, you know, before Jimmy Stewart was on that bridge, let's say he found a guitar and picked up a guitar instead, what would he have written? And that's kind of where Always By Your Side came in. You know, I really wanted to call it No Man's a Failure Who Has Friends. Obviously, the end there with Clarence, and he writes that message to George Bailey. But I don't want to be like, that was too easy to call it that. So I called it Always By Your Side, like the angel on your side, on your corner. And, you know, it was an acoustic song, really, for the most part. But, you know, I wrote those words, and all those words are really me as George Bailey, almost at the bridge, if I had an acoustic guitar. And, you know, Clarence comes down, and, you know, it was a fun song. And again, another project where if we had a band recording it, it probably would have been a little bit different. And even the studio we recorded it in, Jeff Colombo, who also produced Call for Christmas, said, man, I hear some fun stuff. And he started playing like Johnny Cash licks and everything with it. And the song would have changed completely like that with the band. So maybe we'll revisit it. You know, there's a lot of things that's a good thing about being a independent artist, where you can do things and try different things where, you know, but if you're signed to a label and things like that, there's only certain things that you're allowed to do. So these things, like, I want to revisit in different ways and stuff like that. I always, when I go for things, I shoot for the stars. I love that wall of sound, you know, like the Phil Spector sound and things like that, where, yeah, it's fun to play an acoustic song and have everything that we had on it. But if you had what we have for Cole for Christmas, for example, where you have a horn section and all these kind of things to play with, the dynamics of the song change. And, you know, I don't know if we would have done that with Always By Your Side. We probably would have put some strings and, you know, violin sections and those kind of things in there. But yeah, that's always by your side. I did reach out to the Jimmy Stewart Museum in Indiana, Pennsylvania, and we tried raising some money for them. Unfortunately, like I said, you give people the song and no one wants to download it for whatever reason. You know, they'll take the free play. But when it comes to actually, you know, donating towards a cause, for whatever reason, it's like pulling teeth almost to get people to donate sometimes. So we're trying our best to have that washed away with Coal for Christmas, but we're still an uphill battle there too. But always by your side. That one, I put out the acoustic there on Bandcamp, and I called it No Man's a Failure Who Has Friends. Because when I was doing it last year, everyone seemed to like just me on the acoustic and kind of it was very stripped down almost. And that's really what it was meant to be anyway. So I re-released that with just the acoustic, no instrumentals or anything, just me and the guitar there. And that was really it. I mean, we had a good time with it. It was only about 2 hours in the studio. And then Billy Siegel, who plays with a lot of great Jersey Shore bands. He has a cool Grateful Dead band that he plays keyboards with here in Jersey. He played all the instruments, and I couldn't have thanked him enough. And we got that out, but you know, all these things, and you sometimes need a video. I put the video together for that with all stock footage that was free footage. You know, if you have a real person, and let's say I was there and we had snow, and I kind of looked at where It's a Wonderful Life was filmed and all these places and where we could have done things for that song, which could have changed completely the video aspect of it. When you're dealing with stock footage, you're only allowed to work with so much that they have available. So that was always by your side. I still look back at that and I love those lyrics, just not because I wrote them, but it's true. You know, like when you're going through a hard time, there is always someone by your side, whether it's your friend and you know, religious angels and things like that to pray to, your previous family members and things like that who are no longer here. They still hear you. You know, you can always talk to them. They're always there. So that's what Always By Your Side was.
In the new single this year, which is How I Found You, and you've mentioned a couple times, Coal for Christmas, there's actually, it's a much different song, certainly, than Always By Your Side. And there's two different versions. There's one that you did, and then there's one sung by Gary U.S. Bonds. How did that happen?
Well, playing on the Jersey Shore, you get lucky sometimes, and you meet a lot of cool people. I was a kid getting started, get my feet wet, and all I wanted to do was play with these guys. You know, they're the big timers. Gary was around, and before I even started writing music, when I went to go see Bruce Springsteen at MetLife Stadium, he brought Gary on stage, and obviously Bruce wrote This Little Girl Is Mine and Jolie Blonde for Gary and a couple others. Then Little Steven also wrote a lot of songs for him. And I was like, wow, this guy, who is he? You know, I was like, who is this guy that Bruce brought on stage? And then I discovered more through, obviously, you know, This Little Girl and Quarter to Three and all these kind of songs that Bruce had been on and performed through the years. But, you know, when you look back and a couple of these songs that he released in the 80s after those songs were really good, the Dedication album, those kind of things, I was like, all right, well, let me see if Gary will sing on it. One, is he available? How busy is he? He's also 84 years young. So I said, his guitar player, who's his musical director, Mark Linebacker, is also got started with Eddie Testa, who was in Eddie and the Cruisers, was his band. So Mark and Eddie played together, and Mark is a good friend. And I reached out to Mark and I said, do you think Gary would do this? I don't want to bother him, but so he provided some emails, and I spoke to Gary's daughter, Lori. Lori basically said, Dad's in, what would you like us to do? And I didn't know at the time what, so I basically said, well, we'll have him sing a second verse, we'll have him sing a chorus and another chorus. And that's basically all I can think of right now, because when I first wrote it, I wasn't thinking a duet or anything with it. I was thinking just me as a first person kind of point of view singing the song. So I wasn't even sure if somebody singing on it would work, but it turns out it did. And Gary did a beautiful job. So that came about that way. But Gary is obviously a big hero of mine. All these guys that are on the Jersey Shore. So all these guys were heroes of mine. And I said, if we're making a pit stop on the Jersey Shore, stealing Santa Claus's sleigh and making a pit stop, we got to have someone big or someone well known from the Jersey Shore area or somebody that's performed there to sing on this. Who's the guy? So I reached out to Bruce Springsteen. Obviously, he couldn't. The team was very nice. They got back to me right away. They listened to the song for like 24 hours. And I said, I don't believe this. Bruce is going to sing on this crazy Christmas song. And then 24 hours later, they said, unfortunately, due to all the cancellations and his health and obviously all the things going on the E Street camp there, he had to just gracefully bow down because they couldn't, you know, to cancel the tour and jump on a song and then do something like this. I totally understood. But I said, you know what? All they can do is say no. So why not reach out? So Bruce, unfortunately, couldn't. Then I said, let's see who else. You know, this is a rock and roll Christmas song. You know, I'm not hiding it. I think if Chuck Berry would have been alive, he would have sang on this song and those kind of guys. I reached out to Chubby Checker. Chubby said, listened to the song, liked it. And they said, keep us posted. He's in Philadelphia, but he just couldn't work out the time. And also, you know, he's also, I think, 83 years old or so. He didn't have a home studio and things like that. And during this whole process, I was trying to stay out of it as far as me singing it. I knew I had Gary. So I'm reaching out to Chubby Checker, Dion, and all these guys. I said, this is a rock and roll Christmas song. What do you need me on it for? We're going to raise money for Little Steven and the great foundation Teach Rock with it. No one knows who I am. Let's get some guys that people know who they are. And then, you know, Gary sang on it. And that was it. We thought we were going to have Darlene Love for a period of time, too. Darlene Love would have put this song really into a different stratosphere as far as, you know, that kind of, you know, I mean, it's Darlene Love. She's the Queen of Christmas. Unfortunately, she couldn't work it out in her schedule. Even John Landau, who was Bruce Springsteen's manager, you know, got him on Time and Newsweek in 1975 when Born to Run came out. I sent them Gary's version of us singing. Said, song sounds great. Happy holidays, Tommy. So just to hear that from someone like legendary like that, how cool is that? Like John Landau sat and listened to the song with us. You know, there are a lot of people responsible for Bruce, but John has been the guy since Born to Run on, you know, making sure that everything is cool with Bruce and, you know, is a staple of his career too. And a big credit to him for even taking the time to listen to this song and comment on it, which is great.
So you've got all these Christmas singles. Have you thought about, you know, and I know it's a time and money thing, but have you thought about doing a whole Christmas album?
Yes. I mean, you know, the thing is we put up on the housetop. So it's a little, you got to tiptoe through some things when you do Christmas songs, unless you're the big artist, because you know, then you could get the rights and all that kind of stuff to different songs and royalties and all that. So we really look at public domain songs when it comes to Christmas and what is available. So on Christmas Means More this year, at the ending, we kind of did Silent Night kind of ringing out towards the end. Call for Christmas, we did Up on the Housetop and also Jingle Bells. So there are a good list of songs that you could possibly cover if you wanted to. I would have to think about it because the whole thing with me is I always wanted to be an original artist. I loved covering music to an extent, but I wanted to be the man writing it, the person singing it, those kind of things where, sure, covers are great, but that's why I write originals because it's just more in the heart. You know, I feel like, you have to be talented enough to cover songs anytime, but you know, when you're an original musician and all your bread and butter is all you know, writing songs and stuff, and that's really the heart of it. So, like, would I want to write another one? We'll see. I mean, time and money will tell. It costs. Even this project was not free to produce. So, you know, that you're going into your own pocket to fund these things and those kind of things where you know, if you're an established artist, you don't have to worry about that kind of thing. Where here, you're funding basically everything from the ground floor, even to get the studio takes and things like that. So, you know, maybe if we can get a fundraiser going and, hey, I'm going to put out a Christmas album and it's going to have 7 or 8 songs. We're going to do some covers. We're going to have a couple originals on it. If we can fundraise for it, sure, because Christmas to me is what it should be, is fun and exciting. And I would kind of put almost like what you hear with Cole for Christmas and that fun that came out of it. If I was going to do a whole Christmas album, it would probably be something like that, you know, the Jersey Shore sound and rock and roll and fun. You know, sure, could I do a pop kind of cover of Silent Night or something or whatever? But even my favorite Christmas songs, you know, Baby Please Come Home by Darlene Love is my favorite. You know, U2's version of Baby Please Come Home, Tom Petty, Christmas All Over Again. All my favorite Christmas songs are all the old rock and roll or pop, soul songs like The Temptations, Silent Night, and, you know, A Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by The Temptations and those kind of songs. Those are my favorite. That's what I grew up on. That's where my grandparents and parents play for me on the albums and the records and stuff like that. So I'd want it to kind of feel that sound almost like we did with Cole for Christmas, you know, kind of pay tribute to these guys because that's why they're all-time classics, you know, like David Bowie and Bing Crosby, The Little Drummer Boy, and those kind of things. Those are my favorite kind of songs. The new stuff, eh, it's okay. I mean, it doesn't like make me too crazy, but I, you know, these guys are around for a reason, and they're all-time classics and legendary for a reason. So I would want a sound like that. I think Michael Bublé does a fantastic job with his covers and everything because he's old school. You know, he's one of the best in the industry when it comes to Christmas songs and capturing what the sound should feel, you know, of Christmas. You know, he's like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, those types of guys. That's his wing of artists that inspired him. So he gets the deal, you know, those Christmas songs should sound like that, you know? And that's kind of what we did with Cole for Christmas, which is, I think, probably my best song to date. A lot of people said it's not unstoppable. Obviously we're never going to top that one, but, it's pretty good. I mean, I enjoyed it. My wife, so thankful for her because this really started in September. I wrote the song in September and it basically, we recorded it the second week of October and 6 studio sessions later, that's when we finally had the sound and the music together for it, which brought us into like November 7th, 11th. And then, like I said, we were waiting for people that unfortunately didn't sing on it and couldn't sing on it. And then also Gary sent in his parts around like mid-November. So we had to put that together too. So it took a little longer than we had expected, but I told my wife I was going to meet a deadline of like November 19th so I could be here full throttle for the holiday season. And I just missed that deadline by about 2 weeks, but we got it done. That's for sure. And what was cool was for the video, we had to set up the entire house for Christmas. And usually we set it up like the day after Thanksgiving or so. For the house and filming, we've set it up like November 7th. So the kids thought every day since November 7th that Santa was coming the next morning. So it's been a fun time here since then with the house all set up for Christmas, a little earlier than we normally would. But all in all, that is really what Christmas is all about. And, you know, that's really why Christmas, and I didn't intend on writing this song. I was in the garage writing a song called 10 Years. It's kind of like looking back and, you know, how fast 10 years goes and like life. And like I mentioned, my goddaughter Isabella, who Unstoppable was on, you know, 7 years young and now she's 13. Not that that's 10 years, but like how fast life goes and looking back, like on things that, did I do things differently? Should I have worked with this producer instead of that producer and these kind of things and little things that I regret or may have held on to and done differently, things like that. So I went in the garage writing that song, which I'd like to complete next, but I was looking at the garage and Christmas storage in September, sitting in the garage, and I said, I'm hearing a Christmas song. And I started dabbling on the notepad and playing the guitar. And all of a sudden, Call for Christmas came out. So, you know, it was a collective effort to get that done. And I'm so grateful for everybody that's been involved with this project.
And Cold for Christmas raises money for Teach Rock. And you mentioned Holiday Express before with Christmas Means More. And I'll make sure to put links for both of those down in the show notes so people can go check them out. Is your Bandcamp page the best way for people to find your music and keep up with you?
Yeah. So what I did, you know, a lot of people basically through the years are like, you got to put your music out there. You got to put it out. And I basically kept it here. I never published it. I never put it out because for the most part, they were all like demos, you know, early demos from when I was getting going. And, you know, my first band, which we called the Jersey Sound, with a bunch of kids in it that were, we were just learning our way then. You know, it wasn't anything special. And, you know, I didn't, was so hard on it back then because all I wanted to do was be like the guy on the Jersey Shore, one of the guys. And, you know, I was very conscious of what we put out and what we didn't. So what I did, because, you know, this is 10 years ago now, I put out a lot of things. We mastered them the best to our best of our ability. So you'll hear some where there's a song called Through the Fire. That song, we were really close to finishing that one. So you can kind of hear like the whole studio sound and everything. There's another song called When You Least Expect It. That song is on Bandcamp. That was almost close to being done and mastered and finished. So yeah, that's the best place to find me as far as like originals. Outside of that, on iTunes, obviously we have Cold for Christmas, Always by Your Side, Unstoppable. All my latest releases since Unstoppable are all on like Amazon Music and Apple Music and Spotify. But the early stuff is only available on Bandcamp.
I always try to direct people to, when they can, to listen, stream, download music directly from the artist instead of going the other ways. I know everybody can't do that, but, or won't, but I always try when somebody's got a Bandcamp page, either send them to Bandcamp or send them to their website and buy stuff directly from the artist, because I just think that's important, especially for independent artists, so you can keep doing what you're doing. Tommy, thanks so much for spending so much time with us today and talking about all your Christmas songs and all the rest of it, too.
Oh, no problem. I'm an open book, like I said, and I really appreciate you contacting me and reaching out and that you like the Christmas song on Bandcamp with Gary's version of Cold for Christmas for Teach Rock. So go to Bandcamp, search it, Cold for Christmas, Tommy Byrne, Gary U.S. Bonds, and we will definitely see you in the future. And I'm hoping to release some new songs down the road.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I told you how to listen to the station, and you're already listening to the podcast, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page, which lists most, if not all, of the sites that stream our podcast. So you can click over to your favorite, subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.